The mysteries of Xana have been revealed to thee, and if they have not, one would highly recommend parsing the previous record entry in this duality, as therein you shall find the elucidation needed to proceed further along the path of the curious tale of this most sinister of Forge Worlds. The pieces had been set, and the board was in play. Xana had offered itself to Horus Lubrical, traitorous warmaster, in exchange for his boons and a place of primacy at his side, perhaps indeed one prestigious enough to challenge the paramountcy of Mars as the lead arbiter of all things within the new Mechanicum. To achieve this, Xana would not only grant to Lubrical the surplus of arms and armaments it had been greedily stockpiling since the outbreak of the heresy, but a trio of Ordinatus Ulator war machines, arcane and devastating mobile weapons platforms of unspeakable power. Yet, for all their aims and machinations, politicking and backstabbing, for all their assurances in the power of their forge, their technology, their place within the galaxy, things did not go quite as the Lords of Xana had intended. Know then that this be in second part the story of that benighted Forge World, the retribution of Terra that was about to befall them, the fateful conflict known as the Xana Incursion. The handover of the Ordinati to the agents of the War Master was to be the pact that would seal Xana's future. It was an event the Vodian Consistory intended to deliver with all due reverence. Horus, too, knew the power of a deal, and the sheer boon the war machines represented, and accordingly had sent a captain of his first company Reavers, Raxhal Corridon, at the head of a flotilla of 16th Legion ships in the captured grand cruiser Cicatrice Tyrannus. Corridon was escorting the War Master's own gift, a treasure trove of captured technology and biology from every single loyalist Astartes Legion. The stage was set for a summit that looked to shift the balance of the heresy in the western galactic reaches. But fate had other plans. As the War Master's ships hove into the orbit of the titanic gas giant Xana 1, on final approach to the Forge World itself, Auspex grids aboard ship and planetside blared emergency signals, indicating a sudden in-system warp translation. Pinpointed to a volume almost insanely close to the inner system's gravity well, a forced translation of scores of warships was confirmed by the traitor fleet. The incoming vessels made absolutely no attempt to hide who and what they were. Immediately identifiable as Imperial and Loyalist, with their choice of real space entry a statement in and of itself. Here, now, was Terra's retribution, for to attempt translation so close to the gravitic alignment of the local star and its planets was a maneuver rarely attempted for how lunatic dangerous it was. At the van was a ship of simply peerless pedigree, the Amphion, a Gloriana-class grand battleship whose mark was typically reserved for serving as flagships of the Legion Primarchs or the Emperor himself. The Amphion was one of the strategic linchpins of Battlefleet Solar, and her presence here, at the edge of the intergalactic gulf, represented one thing: the judgment of the Praetorian of Terra, Rogel Dorn. The machine minds of Xana process the deluge of sensorium data with inhuman rapidity, conferring with Magi, who likewise conferred amongst their fellows through new spheric telelinks. They confirmed, beyond doubt, that there were now 5 enemy capital ships inbound, with a host of escort cruisers and frigates, as well as a dozen transport craft whose emission patterns were utterly inconsistent with ships of their class. To the automata processors of Xana, this indicated in stark terms the process of the raid, for raid it was. This was no invasion. The transports were not loaded with troops, but munitions, their reactors already running hot beyond their thresholds. Suicide craft, fire ships, kill vessels for the Forge's own macro conveyors, and those of the traitors. For all the fleet-destroying power of a Gloriana-class battleship, the Amphion was there to primarily cover these vessels on their final, desperate attack runs. Dorne's decision was clear. Brutally clear, as is his character. Terra had lost Zanna, and now it was imperative for the Loyalist cause that the wealth of the Forge be denied to the War Master and his ilk. The entire Zanna system reacted as akin to a biological system detecting a bacterium. Across the volume, everything from patrol automata to monitor ships to battle arcs awoke with blinding speed, altering their trajectories and running attack vector calculations upon the intruders. The full processing power of the system's worth of cogitators bent to tabulating and retabulating millions of tactical projections. Within the asteroid belt of the gas giant, void servitors broke from their steel containment holds, giant automata cephalopods the size of frigates, blistering with mechanical tentacles, igniting dead reactors and now powering towards the Loyalist fleet. Despite the skill of the invaders and their navigators, their point of translation left them hours from their targets, and the Forge World had plenty of time to react to this intrusion into their territory. Naturally, the Sons of Horus vessels blitzed the Zanian New Sphere with hails and confirmation requests, demanding updates on just what the Consistory intended to do about the invaders, despite, of course, the very clear sensor readings on their own ships confirming the apocalyptic response of both void weaponry and fleet disposition that the Forge was now throwing at the Loyalists. The Magi of Zanna apologized profusely to their guests, stating that under no circumstances would the formalities be delayed or interrupted, nor would the demonstration of the Ordinati Coridon was scheduled to attend upon Zanna Tisiphone. The ongoing situation was now another demonstration that Zanna was being forced to display, one of their own strength in the face of the enemy themselves. A test unasked for, but nevertheless risen to, lest the War Master's agents developed second thoughts about their Forge's capabilities or their commitment. There would, there could, be no loss of face here. So even as the system aroused itself like a nest of serpents, the Accords continued to proceed as the Vodian Consistory had laid them out. As per arrangement, the gifts of Horus Lupercal made planetfall at the main forges of Zanna II, Setna, Escorial, and Tephra, a move assumed to be one to diffuse possible tensions amongst the ranking magi of the regime by ensuring the carrion spoils were divvied up equanimously. The treasure would of course remain sealed within the various transport barges until Zanna had fulfilled its end of the bargain, locked under coded key numericals known only to the War Master's agents. Meanwhile, the 16th Legion cleaved into geosynchronous orbit over the testing ranges of Zanna Tisiphone. The flotilla, with the barbarous Cicatrice Tyrannus sheltered from the waves of munitions rocketing out system by the bulk of the planetoid. The Sons of Horus detachment made planetfall in force, far more force indeed than the Lords of Zanna had expected. While not atypical for the Sons of Horus and their bellicose nature, it was nevertheless judged within New Spheric Communion as a mark of displeasure at the ongoing situation in the system, as well as a statement of expectation. This was the power of Horus. Zanna must respond in kind to prove itself worthy of the War Master's beneficence. Standing ready to meet the delegation, it is understood that the Zanian Magi were represented by Archmagos Procurator Gilam Rajan, the Prime Arbiter of the United Voidian Consistory. This is largely all that can be corroborated about the meeting itself. It is easy to verify the participants of such a treasonous summit, far less so to establish the nature of their parley, let alone its content. That being said, what does remain suggests the encounter was far from cordial. The Sons of Horus were at this point in their existence given to brutish candor that cleaved to belligerence and arrogance, which was ill at ease with the cold precision to formality favored by Zanian Magi. The presence of Unkvar Noon, the Davanite priest that had first brokered communication between the Forge and the Warmaster, was a curious oddity that nevertheless managed to soothe the rancor of his Legion masters and placate the Magi, mentioning nothing of the ongoing Loyalist force powering towards them, nor the munitions, automata, and starships being flung back. Both sides were eager to proceed with the demonstration, and past the strained pleasantries, and thus did the Lords of Zanna reveal to the War Master's plenipotentiaries a tableau macabre indeed. The Magi had built a false war for their guests, an enemy comprised of thousands of slave soldiers, ranging from abhuman thralls to chattel stock of the forges, captured Loyalist prisoners, even ad secularis divisions, all the products of Zanna's greedy resource raids and incredible industry. All bore one thing in common, the suicide collar around their necks, a devious device capable of remote detonation with a new spheric whim of the Magi they were slaved to. Equipped with everything from small arms to common patterns of Imperial battle line tanks, all of these slaves had been injected with a series of chemical and narcotic stimulants to spike their aggression centers, and all had been ordered to simply do one thing. Survive. The gates to the prison forge rent open, bequeathing unto the battlefield the triad of monstrosities that were the loci of the entire event. Nephithax, Usharax, and Mithrax, the Ordinati. With a neurotropic pulse, the Magi ordered their prisoners forward. Any who resisted knew it was death. Any with the ken to see what was coming knew obedience was also death. Observing the entire thing from within armored cabins of their mastodon transports were the Sons of Horus, void shielded against the pattering small arms fire of the slave army, helm lenses panning and zooming to where the weaponry of Zanna had perched itself. Surging forward, the desperate charges of the Magi swept towards the Ordinati, firing their guns and loosing random, unguided explosive projectiles against the shielded weapons platforms in vain. It was a forlorn hope that they may somehow win their freedom, but no time was wasted by the Zanians. They saw little need to build tension, engaging in theatrics, merely to run the demonstration to the letter. The weapons spoke, and did so with a voice that broke the world. Sonic destructor cannons function, according to what one has found amongst prescribed writings within the Adeptus Mechanicus's data stacks. By collating through its generators and focusing disk, sonic energy of such a potent waveform that it can rupture the bonds of matter within said wave's path. The ground before them was recorded to have undulated with the blast wave, solid rock moving as akin to a roiling sea. The firing of such weapons produced a sound that annihilated all other sound into silence, so loud it breached the boundaries of what can even be considered noise. Bodies at the center of the waveform were simply turned into a red mist, and that mist evaporated into steam by sheer crushing force. Those closer to the edges had their bodies pulverized beyond all possible recognition. Any who were at the periphery and managed to survive did so with either their bodies or minds, or indeed both, shattered, their very selves physically and mentally broken by the force of destruction that had just been unleashed upon them. One barrage had broken the slave army's resolve utterly, but the Ordinati had only begun. The collared chattel of Zanna had been emplaced in defense of an artificial cityscape, one that had been built and destroyed and built again at the whims of the Magi of the Forge and their weapons testing requirements. Streaming forth from it now, goaded again by kill signals from the collars, was a second slave tide, this one comprising of assorted armored columns and heavy infantry divisions. No doubt having witnessed the annihilation of the previous engagement, if such slaughter can even be referred to as such, the tempo of this attack on the Ordinati was far more fevered and desperate, but alas, for naught. The Ulators spoke, and all was unto dust. The killing would proceed for several hours hence. Again and again, the slaves of the Magi were brought before the Ordinati in various combinations, combined arms, mobile infantry, jump troops, automata divisions, even super-heavy armored and self-propelled artillery tanks of rarer Legion marks. All were simply snuffed out of existence by the voices of the Ordinati. It was a charade, by this account, a masquerade of a real battle. In realistic terms, devices such as Ordinatus weapons could not have succeeded on their own against a decently led and coordinated force of arms, but that, of course, was not the point. The demonstration was just that, a demonstration, a chance to revel in the destruction across the torn and sundered battlefield, a bloodbath of staggering proportions, painted by the destructive potential of the weaponry. One expects that the traitorous War Master would have been most pleased. As the bloody ruin of the Ordinati was unfolding, a similar cataclysm was also proceeding in the silence of the void. The system defense fleet of Zanna had engaged the attacking Loyalist ships, spearheaded by the Amphion. The mechanical vessels were charged with extreme urgency from the Forge, with destroying the Loyalist fireships destined for the system's surplus supplies, and all ships in the attacking fleet knew their protection was the highest priority. Imperial ships formed a wedge formation with the Amphion at the vanguard, the weaponry and sheer brute force of the Gloriana class trusted to carve a path through any that stood before her as the Loyalists continued in full burn towards Zanna. Her escorts frantically kept pace and tallies, attempting wherever possible to maneuver into gaps left within their lines or torn open by rabid servitor ships and monitor vessels. Often, this would necessitate these ships using their own voids and even superstructures to protect the fireships from incoming munitions, and although the punishing batteries from the Amphion and they themselves wrought terrible retribution upon the Mechanicum defenders, the hosts of Zanna were many, and those of the Imperium quite a bit more finite. The first Loyalist casualty was the battleship Duquesne's Fury, first falling out of formation, its hull burning from scores of lance attacks, shortly thereafter joined in fiery death by the Spectre of Io, whose crew and armsmen had been utterly overrun by boarding parties of Thalax and Castellax automata launched from a half-dozen Xenian transport barks. The only reprieve for the Imperium was the falling silent of the defense platforms and ground batteries of the Forge World itself, who, after hurling hours of munitions towards the attacking fleet, had bled their ammunition silos dry and were testing the operational limits of their barrels and firing chambers. As resupply orders were hurriedly prioritized, it was nevertheless clear that the battle would now be won and lost with the ships in play. But as cold consensus across the new sphere held, the attrition rate was swinging in Zanna's favor. That was, of course, until a completely unprecedented occurrence. For the second time that solar cycle, warp incursion detection engines screamed in acknowledgement of a new and unaccountable signal. Had this been in the system's outer reaches, it would have been perhaps indicative of Loyalist reinforcements to the oncoming fleet. It was not, however, far from it. The signal was instead emerging from an impossibly close volume of the gas giant Zanna 1. Queries were flashed between Auspex Magi at the speed of thought, for surely this was a malfunction, only for harsh binaric blurts confirming that all machinery was operating within wholly demanded parameters being their answer. No, a ship had translated into the atmosphere of the planet itself, totally within the now depleted defense cordon of the Forge's batteries. All possible ships had burned out of the planet's local volume to intercept the Loyalist fleet. There was none anywhere within even approximate interception range. The ship rose from the murk cleanly and efficiently, with early visual logs parsing a sable-dark superstructure of a unique disposition. This made identification for the Magi of Zanna easy, although, and one may editorialize here, hopefully terrifying even for their cold machine minds. Unique was this vessel in so many ways, for she was not merely the creation of the Imperium, nor even Mechanicum. She was a ship older still, older than all record. This craft had been raised from the ice of Ganymede, the moon of Jupiter, in distant Sol. It was a treasure of the Dark Age of Technology, bequeathed by the Emperor himself to his most lethal destroyers at the very beginning of the Great Crusade. She was the Dark Sovereign, Archaeocruiser of the First Legion Dark Angels. To experienced acolytes, it should come as little surprise that the First Legion were in possession of such a vessel. The Angels, as the first combined Astartes mainline combat force, had a storied history since the Unification Wars of being the Emperor's Angels of Death, and had proven themselves time and time again to be capable of meting out his most righteous annihilation upon whatsoever promised mankind death, destruction, or worse. The Lord of Lightning had provided the First, since its earliest days, with an arsenal of technology that vastly outstripped in potency and lethality those of many other legions. And this extended to their fleet. Amongst the starships the Dark Angels were able to call upon were marks truly unique in the galaxy, relic ships of the Dark Age of Technology whose methods of creation had been lost in the downfall of that lost epoch. But whose weapon systems granted them a deadliness that belied their size. What is, of course, surprising is the presence of the Dark Sovereign here, at Zanna, at this vital moment. Certainly, the appearance of the cruiser, as well as in the volume of her translation, added a completely unseen series of factors into the defense of the Forge World, whose Magi, even as she rose from the atmosphere of Zanna I, furiously re-ran their calculation torrents over what this could potentially mean. On the surface of Zanna Tisiphone, the artificial war was immediately halted as the conducting magi, with Archmagos Procurator Raijan at their center, inloaded this new data with alarm. Seeing as how the only fighting vessels within range were those belonging to the guests of the consistory, Raijan turned to position the Sons of Horus to engage their erstwhile cousins. He intended to do so through the voice of Unkvar Noon, the Davanite priest, only to find that the priest was no longer there. A different figure occupied his place, one who now plunged an electroshock barb into the Archmagos' body, as the massive figure of Raxel Corridon stepped forward, crushing the tech priest's skull with his fist. Amidst the thunder and fury of the incoming Loyalist fleet, and the rising tide of devastation the Dark Sovereign was only just beginning to reap upon the now spent orbital defense platforms of the Forge World, the deception upon Zanna Tisiphone went, initially, unnoticed, and this was all the opportunity the deceivers upon its surface needed to begin their operation in earnest. Raxel Corridon was, obviously, not who he claimed to be, nor indeed were any within his entourage, from the Astartes to the Davanite. Acolytes will forgive me my misdirection at this point. It was simply a bit too delicious to deprive you of the surprise the Zanian Magi must no doubt have also experienced. The Astartes, Corridon, was in reality Endrid Har, a former captain of the 12th Legion World Eaters, called Riven Hound by many who had grown to either admire or dread his reputation. Har was one of the oldest members of the 12th Legion, a Terran ascended to Astartes status during the Unification Wars themselves, before the Legion was known as the World Eaters, before even they were known as the Warhounds. An unusually large marine, with a far higher than average degree of physical prowess, he had risen to prominence during those early days with a marked lethality, even amongst a legion of superlative butchers. During the revolt of the Date Tar, for instance, he had dispatched a renegade Thunder Warrior in single combat by breaking the Gene Warrior's neck, even while each of the brute's fellows had required the strength and skills of 4 to 5 Astartes to bring down. Following the Legion's reunification with its Primarch, Angron, Har had been one of the few members of the newly renamed Eaters of Worlds to not accept the implantation of the so-called Butcher's Nails, the cybernetic implants fused to the root of the Primarch's brain, and by whose actions the aggression centers of the mind were continually stimulated. Har had declared such a gesture empty, a position that had won him little favor within the reorganizing Legion, and one that would find him placed effectively into exile, seconded to a group of Astartes drawn from all legions for clandestine activities at the behest of none other than Malkador the Sigillite. Har would spend the remainder of the Great Crusade upon such missions. At the time of the heresy's outbreak, the World Eater renounced both his legion and his Primarch, consigning himself to the fate of a Black Shield, a legionary without a legion, swearing, as he did so, an oath of death that would see him pledge to atone in action and body for the crimes of his Gene Sire and erstwhile brothers until the time of his perishing. It is believed that Endrid Har was accompanied by fellow Black Shields upon Zana Tisiphone, and though it cannot be directly confirmed if the agents of the Sigillite were present, such a conclusion would not be considered, at least by yours truly, to be out of reach. While the formation of Malkador's Knights Errant had not yet occurred in any true sense, the presence of a shape-shifting agent leads one to suspect the hand of the Assassinorum clade Calidus, whose deployment was typically sanctioned by the Imperial Master of Assassins, an office held by none other than the Sigillite himself. The Astartes, however, were cast-offs in a similar vein to Har. They had renounced their ties to their former legions and primarchs in disgust over their traitorous actions. The disguise as the Sons of Horus had been total. Clearly, at some point prior to the Zana incursion, Endrid Har and his Black Shields had both killed Raxal Coridon and seized the Cicatrice Tyrannus from the now-dead captain, and had managed to do so without alerting the command echelons of the 16th Legion. The Loyalist Astartes immediately seized the prizes within their grasp, all three of the Ordinati once destined for the armies of Horus Lupercal, and added to their reveal by corrupting the slave collars of the remaining Zanian prisoners with data gin torn from the banks of the still twitching body of the Archmagos Procurator. The slaves, freed from the baleful neurotropic influence of their rapidly dwindling magi handlers, ran amok, adding to the chaos of the scene as the wetware of the Guardian Automata struggled to compensate for the sudden abundance of enemies in their midst. In orbit, the Cicatrice Tyrannus maneuvered to block herself from the attentions and potential retribution of the surface batteries of Zana proper, placing herself on the dark side of Tisiphone and refusing all hails that requested, and latterly demanded, she engage the Dark Angels. Her launch bays crashed open as she began a full-scale drop assault on the testbed moon, dropping a company-sized Astartes force in the bellies of screaming Stormbird and Thunderhawk gunships. Endrid Har's plan was proceeding apace. The First Legion, meanwhile, was laying into the defenseless and scattering bulk haulers within the rings of Zana 1 as a predator would amongst livestock. The macro carriers preferred by the Mechanicum, and of course Zana, were colossal barks that knew no war, merely the long, plodding cargo runs they had intended to spend their entire service history undertaking. They had little in the way of shields. They had nothing in the way of weaponry. Even if they had not been caught at anchor, drives depowered, reactors running cool, they would not have been able, even at full burn, to outrun a warship, especially not the one that was traveling towards them. The blade of the Void Black Cruiser carved through them as a knife through paper. Hundreds of vessels were sliced by contemptuous lance strikes or set burning and wrecked by a light barrage of macro cannon fire. The Dark Sovereign reaved through the flotilla, annihilating her way to the central targets. The oldest Mechanicum barks Zana possessed. Unlike the carriers burning in their surrounding volume, these ships had, in their numbers, some teeth to resist the predations of the First Legion's cruiser, and once a firing solution was locked, they wasted no time in doing so. The barrage had little effect on the oncoming ship, whose technology and systems were of an age older and stranger than even the one that had wrought the Mechanicum ships, but her target was almost as esoteric as she was. A bizarre Mechanicum Dromon, of a crystalline form that Loyalist echelons had only been able to establish the name of, Mu 571. Undeniably of Xenos origin, This Dromon was just one of the many mysteries the Xanian priests had half kept hidden from the rest of the galaxy. The weapons fire of the Dark Sovereign ceased, as all of the vessel's arcane reactor output was channeled to shields and engines, the latter to catch her quarry, the former to ensure its protectors could not arrest the hunt. Mu 571 burned engines at full to try and escape the oncoming blade, but it was for naught. The Sovereign clipped her topside, demolishing the Dromon's shields with the sheer force of kinetic energy and sending the vessel spinning hopelessly out of inertial control. Its proximity allowed her to deliver a lethal payload, too, for within the bowels of Mu's 571 suddenly materialized teleport spores, and the strange ship's deck plating soon reverberated with the pounding adamantine steps of Dark Angel Terminators. What was now to forever be known as the Xana incursion was fully unfolding. Upon the benighted Forge World itself, the new sphere was in what was as close to chaos as the consistory could reasonably permit. Data bursts flashed across the planet near instantaneously, the crania of hundreds of magi running hot and burning through coolant fluids as they processed the scale of what was happening. No doubt, amidst the constant inloading and exloading of binaric information, was coded many an accusation of dereliction of duty, or process, or obligations. And equally, there is little doubt that heads, or cranial extrusions, were and would roll for this. The Mechanicum of Xana may have been cold, secluded, and alien even by the standards of their kind, but they were still human, and they had been forced into a corner unlike any they had either expected or could have possibly predicted. The Vodian consistory managed to maintain order, however, and despite the fury contained in the logi streams of each senior magos, resolved to focus now on defending what could yet be defended. The Loyalist fleet, headed by the Amphion, had been unexpected, but by the calculations run globally, defeatable, regardless of the cost that may have been incurred. The arrival of an Archeo cruiser, bearing Legion troops, no less, and fully within the nominal defense volume of the Forge, that was another matter entirely. Factoring that into the sudden betrayal of the Sons of Horus, now fully understood by the Consistory, the Lords of Xana had lost not only the spatial volume of Xana 1 and their precious surplus stockpiles, but also the planetoid of Xana Tisiphone and the three ordinati destined for the Warmaster's armies. New spheric consensus was reached rapidly, although not nearly at the speed that the Gestalt had reached when reacting to the initial invasion. Override signals were fired into the defense picket ships that were currently savaging the Amphion and her escorts. Calculations predicted the withdrawal, for withdrawal it was, would be a costly one, but necessary in the face of now not one, but two completely unchallenged capital ships closer to planetside, the Dark Sovereign and the Cicatrice Tyrannus. Both were currently occupied, clearly, but both were unknown factors pursuing unaccountable aims, and in the face of the sheer power they represented, the Magi had no other sound choice. A paranoid decision, maybe, but pragmatic in many respects. The idea that there could yet be more Loyalists in hiding, in disguise, or on their way in system, ruled the minds of the Consistory. They had suffered not one, but three separate and wholly unique catastrophes this day. They would not suffer more, catching them unprepared. And yet, they would. What occurred next is even more difficult to account for in parsing the records of what remains about the Xana incursion. These, even, have largely been pieced together by predecessors to yours truly, from scattered vox logs and corrupted AuSpec screeds and fragmented vid recordings. What best work has been done was penned in the years prior to the Siege of Terra by Morphidia Turul, an exiled Xanian magos who survived the heresy by petitioning the Praetorian for clemency in exchange for information. It is thanks to her seminal work, The Paradoxes of Binaric Loyalty, being in part the penance of the lost, with diverse discussions pertaining to the Mechanicum that was, that one is even able to formulate one's own chronicle, and we have a hint of what unfolded upon the surface of Xana 2 as the conflict raged throughout its system. According to Turel's work, and as acolytes will of course remember, the War Master's carrion cargo of Legionnaires Astartes' corpses and technology had been delivered to the major forged starports of the Consistory, lying under lock and key until the demonstration of the Ordinati was concluded. With the Sons of Horus that had delivered them now revealed to in fact be the Black Shields of Endrid Har, it was only a canny few magi that questioned just what these cargo haulers may contain. And despite the paranoia that was now ruling the Vodian Consistory, despite the resolve of the New Sphere to never be caught unaware again, from within these containers came now the pounding of armored fists and the tearing of metal. From within, they were rent, and out, well, the dead walked. In silent advance came Astartes, clad in the livery of the Raven Guard, the Iron Hands, the Salamanders, the betrayed and shattered legions who fell victim to the War Master on Istvan V, but also others, the Yellow of the Imperial Fists, the Pale Plate of the White Scars. This revenant army was accompanied by a ramshackle series of armored vehicles and tracked weapons batteries, even dreadnought chassis. The defense automata and the ad secularis thralls of the port were immediately overwhelmed, while the Consistory, its multifarious oculi fixed firmly on orbital defense, once again found a foe in their midst, and once again, whose nature was wholly unexpected. Even once the tagma of the forges, the individual magi and automata and machina maniples that made up the Mechanicum's tagmata, rushed to respond to this fresh invasion, they found themselves facing a wholly unstemmable tide. This was no ordinary Astartes foe, but one of disturbing and unnatural resilience. The legionaries would lose limbs to Mauler bolt cannon fire, but continue to fight. They displayed little issue in the wake of rad charges or chem rounds. Armor that should have been rendered cored and dead by dozens of las cannon rounds continued to power forward, grinding automata under their tracks. Worse, at least from a strategic point of view, was that there was no means of communication to interrupt, no network for the Xenian Magi to interrupt with data gin, no vox of any kind. The army was silent, but appeared to have only one goal, to kill until they could not. Fanning out through the forge fanes of Xana, these Gola Astartes did just that. They killed and killed and killed. Xana too was now burning. 15 hours since the Amphion and her fleet had broken from the Immaterium, the previously unblemished volume under the rule of Xana was in ruins. The fleet of the Forge, disengaging and burning hard for the orbit of their homeworld, was operating at only 33% of its starting disposition, having sustained dire casualties and damage in its costly disengagement with the oncoming Loyalist Armada. Although, of course, the Armada was oncoming no more. The Amphion and what remained of her escorts too disengaged, hulls scored and pitted from hours of punishing battle, but her fire ships no longer acquired, for in the rings of Xana I, the once mighty surplus stock that had been their target was burning. Over 70% of the arms and armaments that had been destined for the War Master's armies had been destroyed by the passage of the Dark Angels, who even now were running hard for the system's closest Mandeville point, the strange bulk of Mu-571 accompanying them as a prize. On the surface of Xana II itself, the Revenant army had finally been halted, but at the cost of mobilizing the entirety of the world's Tagmata and its bonded nighthouse, Malinax. The sinister pilots of this nighthouse were combat veterans all, many having recently returned from service in Horus-aligned expeditionary fleets, but their prosecution of the Astartes invaders ultimately would cost them over half of the suits they possessed. There was no surrender called for, but the invaders had not even made a hint of communication anyway. Their progress was only arrested when the final Astartes had been broken in body so utterly as to be unable of movement. Tephra Forge had lost several of its reactors to breaches, rendering much of its territory uninhabitably radiation-soaked even by Mechanicum standards. While in Escorial Forge, The invaders had breached the warren of subterranean tunnels the facilities extended into, forcing the Xenian Tagmata into a costly and painfully protracted underground purgation operation. On the rent and ruptured testing grounds of Xana Tisiphone, matters were even bloodier. The slave population of the world had been liberated by the Astartes under Endred Haar, and in the resulting chaos, the Black Shields had ransacked the research and development facilities planetside, confiscating all technology they could and destroying all they could not. Curiously, though, their progress had been stymied by the sudden appearance from the world's prison fanes of brazen automata of hitherto unknown configurations. Quite unlike the Cybernetica the Black Shields had battled during their takeover of Tisiphone, these machines were motivated by what was to all the world a predatory instinct, quite unlike the lumbering nature of the other automata, and Haar's forces found themselves wholly unprepared for the viciousness of their assault. Quite who or what was directing them was at the time impossible to ascertain, and, in a fighting retreat to consolidate what gains they had made, the Black Shields lost the Ordinatus Nepothax to the ravenous cyber fiends, destroyed as the machine was rendered in its attempted recapture. This was the final straw for the former World Eater, who ordered a full-scale planetary withdrawal of his forces and the remaining two war engines. Despite sustaining damage as it powered out system, the Cicatrice Tyrannus managed to make her warp translation, and with the subsequent departure of the Amphion and her fleet, as well as the Dark Sovereign, the Xana incursion, as an operation, came to a close. The whole affair is a series of cascading curiosities, to say the least. Almost all of the major involved parties possessed motives that seemingly, and paradoxically, operated both in concert and opposed to one another. It is, by what records remain, impossible to ascertain if the Retribution Fleet of Terra, the Cruiser of the Dark Angels, and the False Sons of Horus under Endred Haar were even acting in concert. But, given the consistency with which each was able to cover and supplement the efficacy of the others, surely some degree of coordination must have been agreed upon before time. It strikes one as impossible that such admittedly disparate loyalist elements could have compromised the defenses of a world such as Xana to such a degree as they did while working alone or uncoordinated. But yet one can find no record of any such communion between them existing. Assuming, for the sheer sake of maintenance of sanity, if nothing else, that this combined operation linked the forces of the Praetorian with those of the Sigillite and those of the Dark Angels, for all of what it's worth at this point, quite disparate elements in the military annals of the Loyalists, it would appear that those under Endred Haar and those of the First Legion were enlisted with the promise of prizes. For the Dark Angels, the strange Dromon Mu 571 disappeared into the void with the Dark Sovereign. One will endeavor, of course, to uncover its fate, and whether its capture played any role in the Angels' prosecution of the Thramis Crusade, but I suspect not, if nothing else given the sheer galactic distance between the volumes of Xana and the then domain of the Nighthaunter. Endred Haar's forces made off with two of the three Ordinati. Not quite the victory they had clearly hoped to achieve, but a handsome prize nevertheless. Certainly, depriving the War Master of these weapons, and doing so while wearing Horus's own colors, was no doubt a pleasing thing to the bitter Black Shield, and equally certainly, the presence of the Ordinati was a boon to the Loyalist defenses of Segmentum Solar until their reported destruction upon Beta Garmin, during the event known only as the Titan Death. Just as with the loss of the Ordinati, the great wealth of Xana was too deprived from Horus's clutches, and while the mundane contribution, or lack thereof, to the war effort that it would have represented can only be estimated versus the cost of the operation itself, such a blow was deemed satisfactory, as the mission's nominal success was communicated to those in the know, and the records were closed upon the matter. These mysteries, such as they are the least esoteric. Even the involvement of the First Legion pales in comparison to the curious case of the revenant Astartes that assaulted the Xanian forges. Although one suspects some degree of parity with other accounts from the Horus Heresy of equally disturbing nature. Dedicated acolytes may remember a short while ago your humble servant committed to record the case of the 10th Legion Iron Hands and their proscribed employment of a series of technologies known collectively as the Keys of Hell. Such rites, such machina, combined in Dread Symphony were known, albeit apocryphally, to permit the employment of cybernetic resurrection. In short, the returning to life of those long dead by means technological. Such devices, such arts, existed so far beyond the bounds of what can be considered safe or sane as to be considered lunacy by even those who were aware of them. But, as one discussed in said record, it is effectively confirmable that the Iron Hands, in their grief following the death of their Primarch, employed such technology to enact vengeance upon the forces of the War Master. Given the reports, scattered though they may be, of what we know occurred on Zanna, it appears safe to assume that, in this case, the Black Shields of Endrithar possessed this technology, and utilized it upon the dead and lost they had seized along with Coridon's diplomatic party. Weaponizing the gift of Horus to the Magi of Zanna carries with it a certain barbed satisfaction, although one will not comment on the nigh-heretical means through which it was accomplished. Best that be left for minds greater and wiser than mine. While the use of such techno-necromancy is the most likely explanation for the Gola unleashed upon the Magi of the Consistory, there is of course no way to be sure of such things. And even the records of that attack, Admiral, as Morfidiatoral's work upon the matter is, remain disjointed and inconclusive. We must, unfortunately, place this particular case, this particular aspect of the incursion, amongst the sundry ominous mysteries of the Age of Darkness that yet remain unsolved and unaccountable for 10,000 years later. It would perhaps be remiss of me to call the final and most loathsome question of the conflict as one. I do so simply to remain true to the spirit of academic inquiry, as there can be no verifying the connection that I am nevertheless about to posit for the sake of clarity. The automata that suddenly arose from the underground prison complexes of Zanna Tisiphone to strike at Endrithar's Black Shields were of an entirely different caliber to those the Astartes had dispatched with relative ease during the assassination of the Archmagos Procurator. They were, by accounts collected from the databanks of the Cicatrice Tyrannus following her destruction later in the Heresy, of an animalistic mien, more akin to beast than battle robot. They were of patterns, undiscernible to the tech priests that examined any picked captures from the Astartes helm logs. Nominal chassis remained, of course, of the typical Castellax, Vorax, and Domitar automata marks, but, for instance, all seem to have been subjected to modifications of such an extreme degree as to render them unclassifiable. No motivating force was discerned by the rapidly retreating Black Shields that fell under the voracious assault of these machines, and the tech marines attached to the company were only able to report the data links between them and whatever figure was holding their proverbial leashes was in a base cant unlike any they had encountered. Indeed, this was where any new spheric links existed at all, for the tech marines were also given to report that, monstrously, most of the attacking automata were doing so of their own free will. This latter point, coupled with the violent behavior they displayed, of course draws one conclusion. Abominable intelligence. But I would caution you against jumping to that extreme just yet. To differentiate conjecture from plausibility in this regard, we must examine the latter history of Zanna following the incursion. The raid damaged and depleted the Forge World's power severely, but not totally. The provender of Zanna, the arms and armaments to the Ordinati, all had been denied to Horus, and perhaps could have been considered enough for Terra to rest comfortably in having wrought just retribution. But the incursion had, of course, cemented the pact between Zanna and Horus nevertheless. And joined now, they were, in shared enemy and shared enmity. Most worryingly of all was that, according to Loyalist intelligence, the Vodian Consistory was deposed almost immediately in the aftermath of the incursion, in a violent uprising by enraged Magi across the Forge. who were being led by a darker force than even the ruling regime had been. One has noted, since the beginning of this record, that the Zanian Synod had ever been typified as a coolly detached and isolated one, that verged on sinister, since the world was first reunited with the Imperium and eventually, torturously, brought into its nominal umbrella rule. There had ever been rumors of just how such a Forge world breached the doctrines of the Machine God with their research and development, but without any form of oversight from Mars, a part of the compliance agreement signed by the Consistory with the Imperium, nothing could ever be confirmed. And it not was like the Lords of Zanna were going to tell, anyway. The Veil was, of course, utterly torn back in the aftermath of the incursion, with the rise of Zanna's new regime, supported by the arts and artifices of the War Master's dark hand. It would appear that, ironically, the rapidity of Zanna's plunge into the foulest reaches of science and industry was the direct result of the assault of Har's Black Shields. They had mounted upon the prison complexes of Zanna Tisiphone, and just quite what they unleashed within. Anacharis Scoria was, by scant references, a Magos Dominus in the service of the Vodian Consistory, several decades standard prior to the outbreak of the Heresy. But for some unknown time, and for reasons redacted, he was stripped of his title of Magister, and of his responsibilities, namely of being the chief enforcer of machine cult doctrine to the regime. Imprisoned for these undisclosed crimes on, yes, Zanna Tisiphone, it was he who would, in the aftermath of the incursion, rise to power and prominence as the first amongst the world's new lords, earning the title the Xanophane Tyrant for his cold, inhuman viciousness. Scoria's presence upon the battlefield of the Horus Heresy as the years ground on towards the Siege of Terra are a matter of not inconsiderable debate, but where the new Tagmata of Zanna did march, they often did so accompanied by automata of unique brutality and violence. It is no small stretch of the imagination to presume that it was Scoria who was responsible for forcing the retreat of the Astartes who unwittingly freed him from his imprisonment. With dark irony, the driving force behind Zanna's rebirth in later years was he. He, Scoria, led Zanna to becoming one of the first Hell Forges of the Dark Mechanicum. This, of course, was the ultimate fate of the world, consigned now forevermore to corruption, lunacy, and science unspeakable. A coalition of the insane and the abominable, crafting the warp as they would their metals. The Zanna incursion, as a loyalist operation, is a tale as fascinating as it is mysterious, and it is likely we do not know the full ramifications of what was wrought that dreadful day, and we probably never will. Ave Imperator. Gloria. In excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.